Hello, this is Dan Le Batard, and the guy we're talking to today is one of my favorites ever, covering him in sports because he was so honest and accessible. And during the Big Three eras, everything was going crazy around him. He was always somebody that reporters could go to, and he would give them honest insight. So I've always enjoyed talking to him. I always thank him after talking to him for being so professional. His career was cut short in a really unexpected fashion. Chris Bosch with us for this episode of South Beach Sessions. He's super interesting. Let's get started. Chris, you've been an unusual athlete throughout your life. You've been willing publicly to be vulnerable. You have been unusually accessible over the course of your career. I want to sort of help people understand the person that I've gotten to know a little bit, how it is you became who you became.
Yeah.
So what did your upbringing look like? What are the details the audience would need to know to sort of understand how Chris Bosch grew up?
How far back, like in where I grew up? I grew up in a small town called Hutchins, Texas. It's the next city south of Dallas, right there on I-45. So if you've ever been to Dallas and driven to Houston, you've driven through my hometown. And we were kind of excluded a little bit because, you know, the part of town that we lived in, my grandfather owned a lot of properties and my grandmother, she lived next door to us. So he owned both houses before he passed them down. And that's pretty much where we grew up, with my grandmother living next door. So we had a very huge sense of family, and Dallas was right there. So we would drive, and, you know, I spent a tremendous amount of time at recreation centers. I used to go to Tommy M. Allen Recreation Center in Dallas, Texas. Highland Hills is what we call it. I went to school there. I went to Lincoln High School in South Dallas, in the South Dallas. If you've ever been to State Fair Park, those who have been to Dallas, if you've been to the Fair Park, you've been right across the street from our rival school, Madison, which, you know, we can tell some area jokes. It is urban. like people always say, we're doing an urban thing. And like, yeah, okay, I know.
I wasn't sure though whether you grew up country or urban.
It was kind of a mix of both, because we were in Hutchins, it was no trouble. You know what I mean? I didn't have friends that lived next door. My friend lived a couple miles.
You
down
were
the
isolated.
Street.
It was, yeah, just your family. You're growing up for how long with just basically family as your largest interaction?
Yeah, I mean, the whole time. You know, the whole time. We moved when I was 17. And me and my brother shared a room. You know, shared a room with my brother. I was doing the math. I said, damn, you know, I still have shared a room technically with my brother for half my life for a while. You know, I've only had my own room for so long. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, now I'm married. You know, I've been married for a while, so. Right. Only a short period of time in my life have I had my own room. But, you know, that's how we grew up. And, you know, my friends, they stayed in the more urban, quote unquote, area. And, you know, I stayed where we stayed. It was a little more fields, they called it the country or whatever.
But how were you as a kid? Were you confident? Were you shy? Were you active? Were you brave?
I wasn't brave. Yeah, I was a very shy kid. I was kind of awkward a little bit. Tall, out of place, and basketball was kind of that thing that you know, helped me be cool, or helped me give myself confidence, and helped me make relationships with my, you know, friends. You know, they would be cool during school, but on the court we were equal. You know, and that's what I loved about basketball. You know, so
how awkward were you though? Like, I've talked to Kevin Durant about this. He used to pray during that age to be smaller. He wanted to be shorter because that's an awkward age to be taller, yeah, and different than everyone else.
No, I wanted it. I was that kid that wanted to be tall, but the reaction that you would get was kind of like the thing that I didn't really like about it. It's a good thing to have attention, but when you do get it, it's kind of, you know, especially from your peers at that age, it's kind of strange. I remember we would religiously go to church every Sunday, and we were very much so involved with our church. And it's called South Central, the South Central Church of Christ in Joppy, Texas. If you've ever been to Dallas, I can't even describe it to you. Do your research.
Google it, people.
But yeah, it's pretty much like the first area that black people could buy land after slavery. You know what I mean? After certain civil rights, whatever civil rights were given to black people, they could buy land. This was one of the three places in the city that you could purchase property. So it has it's a very old place, and that's where we went to church all the time. And during the summer, we would always organize, you know, vacation Bible school. You know, we would do that for a week, and the kids there, I couldn't stand those kids, but they would always call me Michael Jordan, and I hated it because I wanted to be called myself. I didn't want to be known as just the tall guy.
Oh, you were famous. So you were famous before you were famous.
Yeah, kind of.
You're getting treated like someone who's different from the other human beings just because you're taller,
right,
and you're good at basketball.
Right, right. And then with that, I wanted to be successful in basketball. So with more popularity came, then they see you in person. It's like, oh, yeah, this kid is really he's really tall, you know, and that kind of became its own thing. So, yeah, as you put it perfectly.
But how did it go from awkward to confident? Like, where did that happen? I know basketball helped a great deal, but explain to us who you were right before that transformation and what basketball did for you.
It was tough because once I went to Lincoln, I made a choice to go to that school. I was supposed to go to another school, and which got shut down, by the way, just to show you kind of the state of the school district.
Just shut down because it was not.
I don't know. It was like some crazy story. Like the superintendent was embezzling money, and it's like
stories.
What money? We had money. So you're telling me that this district actually had money and didn't get new stuff? That doesn't make any sense. Have you seen it? Wilmer Hutchins School District. Do your history.
Google it.
You can Google it. That's where Spud Webb went to school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's where I was supposed to go, but I had an opportunity to go to Lincoln, which was more prominent for sports, and it was a magnet school. It still is, and that was the reason I was able to go there, because I got accepted into their magnet program.
So the kid walking into class there,
yeah,
and now you're going to be the star athlete on the team, right?
Well, it wasn't like that. I didn't even – now, mind you, it's funny. I tell people this story sometimes. I forgot about it myself. I wasn't even picked most likely to go to the NBA in my yearbook. Yeah. We had a guy by the name of Brian Hopkins. He played professionally in Belgium for years. Went to SMU. He was that guy. He was the freshman starting on varsity. And we had a pretty good team that year, too. I mean, every year we had a pretty good team. But, yeah, it was known for basketball, and I was just some tall kid.
But you're coming in as at a good athletic school. You've got a higher value as you're walking through the door, and you know it, or you don't know it yet?
I do not know that.
Because you've still been a little bit what? What are you these 2 years before you're going in?
Well, I've been getting my ass kicked in Wilmer Hutchins for years, you know, so the winning confidence for winning and can I really do this wasn't all the way there yet. The love was there. But the spirit for competition and the confidence in your game and your ability to grow or my ability to grow wasn't there all the way just yet.
Were you any kind of troublemaker? Because it sounds like you were. If you're isolated with your family and very religious, there's only so much trouble you can get into.
True. I don't want people to think like it was super religious, and it wasn't like that. You know, we did have neighbors. It's more developed now in Hutchins now, like across the street. Me and my dad joke about it now. It's a basketball court less than 100 yards away from my old front door. And I told my dad that I had to call him as soon as I saw that. I said, could you imagine if I would have had a basketball court right here? And he said, no, you would never be home. You would always be on the court. But I've always kind of been like that. I've had my likes and dislikes, and I kind of just do the things that I want to do.
Well, you've always done that, right?
Yeah.
Do other guys in the locker room find you unusual, right? Because you're someone who is – very well-rounded.
I don't know. Do they think that's unusual? I mean, I don't know. I would have to ask other guys. I mean, I think, you know, there's always kind of preconceived notions, and I want to usually knock those down when I meet people because, I'll be frank, athletes aren't known for speaking well and handling themselves well. Unfortunately, that doesn't get the press that it should most of the times. So I know when I'm meeting somebody that they're going to have a preconceived notion of me, especially an athlete. So I break that wall down. I'm like, hey, I'm a regular dude. I like doing things that are regular, bro. You know what I mean? Come on, let's hang out. I joke, I laugh, and usually that kind of catches people off guard. I want you to experience me as a person first. That way, when I tell you, okay, yeah, I'm going to pick up this book, you're more likely to listen. Because if I come right to you and say, yeah, you know, here's a book for you, like, okay, that's kind of weird.
When you say you march to your own drummer, what can you give the audience in the way of examples of that? Because I don't mean unusual as a pejorative. I yeah. mean that you were not usual. The things that
sure.
you were a great teammate, but you were also to yourself, and you seemed to have a different set of interests than almost everyone in the locker room.
Yeah, you know what? I tried kind of doing, you know, falling for peer pressure and doing stupid things with your friends. I've done those things, and I was just the type of person that's like, yeah, okay, it never did anything for me. I kind of just wanted to do what I wanted to do. So, and it just kind of, you know, settled in for me. So by the time I got to the league, especially here in Miami, you know, I would read, you know, yeah, I want to read a book for a game because I like reading books. I want to get this book done. And this is the best time to do it because I have time and I can sit here and be peaceful until it's time, because when I go out here, it's going to be, you know, 20,000 people. We've got to win tonight. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to get away and relax my mind before the stress really hits. So that was like, you know, just one of the things that I would do, but and you, people would find that.
You were so uncommonly honest, though. I remember for no good reason at all, you decided to say that the Boston crowd in a playoff game was bothering you.
Like, and that, you know what? And here's the thing. I will tell you now, the true story is, now that we're all – I don't know why I said that, because I was kind of in my own way and we had just lost. The real reason was because I had a crook in my neck and I had taken some medicine that had me kind of loopy. You know what I mean? That really happened.
Right.
So, I think it was, I forgot what it was.
So you're doing interviews. You're doing interviews
right
with
after
the media.
Game. And I don't want to make no excuses, you know, for my performance, because I stunk that night. Uh-huh. And so I just said that.
Oh, Chris, you didn't want to say anything about my neck, your medication.
No, I didn't want to, you know,
and
I didn't want to be that guy.
Now you're a medicated guy telling people, yeah, the Boston crowd got to me.
The medicine was probably still a little in my system. I said, you know, the crowd, I walked right into that. And they killed me for it. I was just so mad. But I was able to redeem myself in game four. So, you know, things work out. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't know why I did that. But that was the real reason, because I just, it had been bothering me. I said, man, damn, this is really hurt. Oh my, I'm freaking out. We got to win tonight. I asked Dwayne, hey, have you ever taken this before? They say it'll help, anti-inflammatory, lose me. They, oh yeah, 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 it worked for me. I said, okay, did not work for me. You know, hey, it was, and then it was so funny. Before game four, we're warming up. I'm on my mind like I'm about to redeem myself. You know, it's 2 days in between a playoff game. It's the worst, especially after a performance like that. So I'm just taking it all. People are killing me. I'm rolling with it. I said, okay, you know, just got to next game, got to perform. And I remember just warming up, and I never look at the scoreboard. And everybody, you know, they were showing the highlight for the Celtics, so I'm looking up and everything. Everybody's getting pumped up. And they had my quote, and they flipped it a little bit.
Oh, no.
Chris was scared. You know, like the next day, he was scared.
Right. Oh,
okay,
no.
I didn't say I was scared.
It was the drugs. It was the drugs for my neck.
I said that the crowd got to me. The moment got to me. I thought in my crazy mind that I was just taking it on the chin, and they gave it to me.
The mentality is funny with you guys in terms of not making excuses. Was that the same series where you woke up one time with an eye infection? Like, was that the same series?
Yeah, it was the same series.
So what happened there? Hold on a second. That whole series, the blueprint feels like it's on the line, right?
Yeah.
It
is on the line.
If you guys lose this series, it feels like the three of you are no longer going to be together, right?
We're supposed to win it all, and, you know, it was just this massive time, and you know, everybody on the outside was not shy about their distaste for us or their motivation for us, their incentive for us to lose.
You got people so mad with that first,
and it's
with the introduction. But you got people mad with the introduction, which looked like so much fun.
Right. It was, of course it was fun. It was amazing. Were you there?
I was there.
Wasn't
yes.
it fun? Didn't you have fun?
Yes, it was great. But
I
don't think anyone enjoyed it more than you do, because I love seeing the video of you sort of turning around on that stage and being sort of surprised at what hit you in the face.
That was crazy. You know, Brian and Dee, they were trying to act like they were cool. They were just like, you know, too busy being cool. I was like, man, I waited my whole life for this. Let's go.
But that made people so mad.
They're with it too. I'm like, where is 30,000 people here and no game? We don't even have the court up right now. You see what these guys put together? Look at the muscle of the Miami Heat. You know. I had a great time, man. It was amazing. You know, then again, we're just in the moment. And like, so that whole day, nobody told us what they were doing. You know, they didn't tell us they were planning that until right before.
Well, weren't you guys like in the bowels of the place still finalizing the paperwork on the contracts as they're fitting your uniforms to get you out there for the pep rally?
So all day, you know, I'm a basketball historian. I've been watching basketball since I could remember. You know how it goes. Such and such, da-da-da-da-da, the press conference on the table, you hold the jerseys up, done. We party all night the night before because Bron, you know, we don't see the jersey burning. We only see the celebration.
Oh, is that right? We're in the bubble.
We're in the bubble of Miami. I'm in Miami. I flew in the day of, that day of the decision. And
still not knowing for sure if he was going to do this, feeling like he was,
he's going to come here. Right. But there was a buzz when we got here and I had never experienced anything like that. Nobody has, but I'm coming from, you know, at least Dwayne and LeBron, they've been to the finals. They have a sense of it. I did not, you know, I had 11 playoff games under my belt. You know, so we came down here and it's amazing. It's a buzz. Everybody's happy. He comes. We're at Mr. Chow in South Beach. We're in South Beach, bro. You know what I mean? Like,
and it's a circus around you.
Jesus. And we partied that night all night. I don't even think I went to sleep. And I'm still up and no call. Then it's the afternoon. No call. Everybody's just silent. I'm like, yo, what's going on? We're just at the hotel. I'm at the hotel just waiting. You know, all day. I'm so just excited to get there. Nobody can sleep. They call us around 5-6 o'clock. Hey, come on down to the gym. Okay, we finally. And then when my wife, we were dating, we drive up and it's just loads of people just around the arena. And I'm like, whoa, this is crazy. You know, just posters going by and buses with us. They done made posts. They got me in a Heat jersey. I haven't taken one picture in a Heat jersey. I'm like, this is crazy. And then then we got there and then that's when we did the paperwork. And
still no one's told you what you're doing though, be coming up. No one's told you you're going to be coming up on some sort of platform that's
They explained that about half an hour to an hour before. And so then the team comes in and say, all right, this is what we've got. And they draw out the blueprint. We're like, yo, this is crazy. You got it. You're messing around, right? They're like, no. So I watched wrestling growing up.
Entrance. You know how to make an entrance.
Come on. We're still talking about it to this day, you know, and man, they had the pyrotechnics and the lifter thing. I'm like, yo, Ric Flair did the same thing. I know how to work a crowd. I've been waiting on this my whole life. Let's do it. Oblivious to the fact of how it would be perceived.
Because you guys were in the celebration bubble. So go ahead. Yeah. Let's cover some of those years and just tell me from that moment, right? You tell me what it felt like and what you saw when you turned around and you'd come in, made the Ric Flair entrance, and now you see, oh, Miami is really happy about us being here.
I was all for it. You know, I was really happy. I found the girl of my dreams. We're engaged. It's like a brand new life, and it's time for me to be everything that or accomplish these dreams that I've had my whole life. That was pretty much the thought process behind
it. And if I come up to you on that stage and say, Chris, what's this team's record going to be this season?
100-0. We're not losing a game. We might lose two.
You guys thought
we're winning championships.
You guys thought it would be easier, though.
Yeah, right? We thought it was going to be easy. I mean, we were even, you know, having conversations like, yo, we can win 4 in a row, which we had a shot. You know, we had a shot at it, really not knowing how hard it is, you know, and how much you have to win 4 in a row.
Well, what I remember from that first season is how much you cared when it was over and you lost.
Yeah.
You collapsed. On your way back to the locker room.
Yeah, I didn't know the camera was there. If I hadn't known the camera was there, I could have kept it together for a little bit longer.
You're not embarrassed by that, are you?
No, because I'm not embarrassed by it. You know, it was just a reaction. The problem was the reason that happened. I care about basketball. I've been doing this thing my whole life. I wanted to win so bad. Getting kind of that publicity, being infamous, was not for me. And I never even wanted that. You know, all I wanted was to be liked, and people just did not like that.
Well, when did you realize that it was that? When did you realize that you guys were infamous now?
Because as soon as the next day. I mean, you're talking the parade the next day. The next day, it's like, oh, wait a minute. You kind of, you know, have your Miami dream, and then you kind of snap out of it a little bit, and you watch TV, and you kind of see what the outside thing is saying, and you realize, like, oh, no, people are not happy with this. They burned LeBron's jersey all night last night. It had a marshmallow roast with all, you know, his former stuff, and it's not good. And, yeah, I mean, they're pumping it 24/7. And, yeah, they think it's like they thought we put the thing on. It's like, okay, well, we're all signing here, and we're going to throw a parade for ourselves because we're so awesome.
Was it fun? Because I imagine that you thought it was going to be one kind of fun, easy winning. We'll be rock stars. We won't be infamous. We'll be famous. It'll be a lot of fun.
It wasn't fun for me. I didn't, you know, because just the treatment, just the backlash that I was getting, man, it made it super hard. So just taking the conversation full circle, that's why I felt like that, because we had got that far, put so much into it. At the very least, we could have won that's how I felt. At the very least, we can win. That was like one of the only things that would make me feel good today. Is that, you know, outside, of course, my family unit strong, got the girl of my dreams I'm actually going to marry, and that's amazing. We're going to start a family soon and do all these cool things. But outside of that.
So you're saying on the second day of being a member of the Miami Heat already, it's a different thing than what you thought you were signing up for.
Oh, yeah.
And you go into it thinking, I'm going to be liked now. Mm-hmm. And it's important to me to be liked?
Yes, at that time. Mm-hmm. Yes, because I thought, oh, this is how things go. I love Jordan. I love Shaq and Kobe. You don't know the other side to the whole thing. Far as like perception and the media and stuff like that, and just the media game, that's a whole different game. That's like that other side of basketball and business that you have to take on and really be able to be good at as well.
Did you develop an immunity there, or would people still cut you with the things that they said or did? If somewhere in you is the little kid who still kind of wants to be liked, that was awkward at 9 years old, and basketball gave him confidence.
He left that time when he was crying right there. That was it. That was over after that. Mm-hmm. I was like a different person. It was kind of like a baptism, so to speak, because what happened is, we're walking, we lost. And it's like when the buzzer goes off, you kind of have to get over that you just lost, because in my mind, it went a totally different way. I'm like, hey, we got two games at home to win a championship. Ultimate confidence. And then
the finality doesn't hit you right away.
Then it's 2 minutes left, and then you hear Mavericks fans cheering. It's like, hold on.
Well, Chris, I remember the last 5 minutes of that game. I remember it's the only time I've ever seen it from LeBron, and I'm not the guy who's out here calling anyone a choker. He was passing the ball in a way those last 5 minutes of the Dallas games that was just sort of panicked, frustrated, and didn't want to be there physically anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's falling apart. It was happening like that for all of us. And then, you know, it's happening like that for him, and he's the leader. So naturally, it trickles down into the whole team. And I remember for me, I just felt like I was just watching, because I got off to a good start in that game. And you know, then I was kind of isolated out the offense. We just stopped moving the ball. We stopped playing defense. It's just the moment was too much for us. I think the pressure got to us a little bit, and naturally, right? We had to feel that pain. You know, you have to know what's necessary to be successful and what you can lose. And so after that happened, Tyson Chandler, he's a good friend of mine. buzzer goes off, and we're just like, damn. And he comes right up to me, you know, hey, man, good series. Hey, don't worry about this. You guys are going to win. And I'm just looking at him like, what? And whatever. And I walk off, and somebody said, hey, get him next year. Ugh. We lost, you know, and it took me right back to those moments. I used to cry every game after I lost, like up until 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Like somebody had, like my, I know my dad was worried. Like, yo, what, come on, bro, pull yourself together, Jesus. You're 12 years old crying after every, and we didn't have a good team, so we lost every Saturday. I cry, and so it took me right back to that moment, and it just hurt. And then I start thinking. Everything started just going of how unfair life was at the time. And man, we got all the way here and lost. And then I start jumping to how much they're going to be making fun of us. You know, it's just like.
Yeah, we're going to become a joke here for the offseason.
They're going to kill us.
They're going to enjoy. You were saying you thought the one victory you would get from infamy is at the end, I'm going to be the one laughing.
That'll make me feel better, which gives you more pain at the end of the day. You know what I'm saying? And then I just, I mean, it hurts. So I was physically reacting to physical pain.
In some ways, you're also a different human being. Like that guy, that Chris Bosh, I'm not going to say he was a child, but he was a young man.
Yeah, for sure.
This Chris Bosh is an adult with responsibilities who could look back on that guy.
And just pat him on the back. Yeah, get it on out, man. Come on. Get up. And you know, we were a team. And I remember Eric Dampier was like, yo, come on, man. Come on. Come on. Come on. So I got up.
Oh, but Eric didn't care. Eric didn't care the way you cared, though. Eric did not care the way you cared.
Of course, right? He's a grown man. You know, he handles those things differently at that time. So he's like, yo, come on. And I had my hand. That's when I was like walking, like, you know, with my hands over my face. And then I saw the camera up there and I'm like, Oh no.
They caught me in my most vulnerable moment.
They
can't be trusted with it.
Yeah.
They cannot be.
I didn't know it was there. It was right over the locker room in the hallway. And I saw that. And then, you know, I already knew it was going to happen. And it happened. My worst nightmare came true. I'm not known for being an all-star caliber basketball player competing for a championship. I'm the dude that cried and, now I'm soft, and now I'm stuff.
Well, you were already carrying some of that unfairly into the season.
Right, he's just softer.
Just because of your frame, people were giving you soft.
And it's been like that my whole life. You know, it's been like that my whole life.
Yeah, but the whole sport has evolved to meet you. Like, you were the guy.
Isn't that crazy?
You were the guy who was able to do that before.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Most people your size were able to do it.
Yeah, you know, when I was growing up, oh, you're frail, he's soft. Like, why am I soft? What, do I just have to bring a... You know, I just have to whoop everybody on court to, you know, get suspended and stuff like that to play basketball. I just gave you 30 and I'm soft. That's crazy. I just made the all-star team again and I'm soft. That's the weirdest thing in the world. But, you know, it is what it is.
Well, let's talk about the happier stuff then. I always appreciate that you don't mind going to the dark places.
Oh, I love
places.
Talking. People need to know this stuff. You need to know this stuff. It's hard.
So the next year, though, you guys go into Boston, and it felt – I remember Miami sort of feeling afraid as a city. You're going into Boston for game six.
Yeah.
And that really felt like if you guys lose that game
– it's over. We knew that.
You guys knew flatly that if you lost that game, game six in Boston, people were going to be traded.
We talked about it as a team. That was like in the conversations, you know, daily conversations. But that's what it was. That's what we wanted. So it's like, hey, man, let's go out there and win it. We know what it is if we don't. So
you like the stakes. It makes you feel a little more alive, or you go into
you learn to like it. You learn to – I got comfortable in that place because it forced you to think – nothing but basketball. And if we're thinking about basketball, if we're playing basketball, I'm confident as a team, as anything. And
is there anything that you're more confident about than your ability to play basketball? Because you to climb over, you know, everything you have to climb over in a fight for money to get to the top of basketball, like,
I would say just as a person, I'm more confident as a person now. You know, I have that same confidence in the arena of life, I guess. Because I'm comfortable with who I am.
That must be a nice feeling. There must be a great tranquility.
It's
in
pretty
that.
Good, you know, because basketball gave me continues to give me the confidence. But it's like, okay, I can do that. That's stressful. Okay, I'm done with that. I know I'm retired now. Okay, that's cool. We did it. Woo! But at the time when I was playing, it's nothing else to think about. It's like, yo, you're free. You just go out there and play. What you going, I'm worried about this. What are you worried about? Don't do it. Mm-hmm. Worried about messing up. Great. Don't.
That'll make it easier.
And if you do, you got to forget about it because you got to get a stop. It's game seven. Mm-hmm. You know, so those things actually being in those moments actually put me in my comfort zone because there's nothing else to talk about.
So game six, you go into the arena and you're feeling how about things?
Worried. We were all worried. I think we were all worried because I was hurt. You know, I had tore my adductor. And I came back, and then Paul Pierce hit that jumper and right on Bron to go up four. We lose game five. We never lose at home. And I was like, oh, that wasn't supposed to happen.
That happened
damn
fast.
Whoa, this is my first game back. We're supposed to, you know how it usually goes. Crowd's fired up. You know this part. Crowd fired up. I come back. We win convincingly. No? Okay. Damn. Different script. So, and I mean, you know, you have to work up your resiliency in the pursuit to just be immune to those things. It's you, whatever route that I'm taking, it is what it is.
So were the next 2 years, from that moment on where you guys win, were those next 2 years a little more fun because you guys are now the champions?
Yeah.
And it's
yeah, not- absolutely. Absolutely. It was fun, very fun, but then Pat Riley's the president. There's only so much fun, candidly speaking, around Pat. You can have fun when we win, but June to early August, you can have fun. Anything outside of that, hey, what are you doing? You have, you know, no, we got to win. And that's the pressure that we wanted as well. So it was fun, but then at the same time, there was still a lot of business to be taken care of.
Is that period, because I think a lot of people probably think, well, this talent got together and they won and hooray, but I don't think people understand the kind of shape you guys were in. I don't think people understand how hard you were working. Like,
yeah.
Comparatively,
yeah.
Had you worked that way before?
No. I mean, I remember being on vacation. We would win, and then we're on vacation with my family, and I'm sitting around like, man, I at least got to get on the bike. Let me get down to the weight room right quick and just get, you know, an hour in. And this is 2-3 weeks out, yeah. You know, because I know LeBron is working. Mm-hmm. I know Dwayne's working. Now I can't, you know, the Heat going to have that, you know, that test. Let me go ahead and get in shape. You know, Spo and Riley, you know what they're going to do.
That test is crazy. Right?
You know what they're going to do.
That test is crazy. What can you
can fight it all you want.
Yeah.
But they're going to insinuate and insist, and it's like, all right, we'll do it. And you've got to – they believe in being in shape and just the culture of the team. That was a part of it. So that was always looming as well. So it was never much time to rest.
How much friction was there on those teams? Like, how much friction?
Not much.
That's
not much.
Unusual, is it not? Like,
yeah, I think so. I think it is, you know, unusual. And you know, it's the usual friction with trying to accomplish winning a championship. Any team – You're around someone for 10 months out of the year, it's going to be natural friction, but nothing to be like, oh, man, something, you know, you deal with natural friction just because people are looking for a way in. They're looking for vulnerabilities to try to pierce the armor. But we knew where we were, and that's when we had the most fun, usually. I mean, supporting each other, going to each other's charity events. You know,
well, you guys did all the family events together,
yeah.
Like all of the wives were together,
yeah,
for everything.
That was the best part. You know, that was the best part in the midst of everything going crazy and stuff. We were still a very solid unit, and that's what, you know, I miss about it.
So if I come up to you after game two in San Antonio in the fourth year of the four-year run, it is 1-1 and one of the games you guys have lost. You were up. You hit that four-point play. You're up 9 in the fourth quarter. And then what? San Antonio purposely sabotaged you by turning off the air conditioning?
That was game one. So game one was the air-conditioned game. You know what's funny about that game? Like, we played, okay, it's the finals, and I remember warming up. I'm like, man, I'm ready to go. I got a lather going today. I'm juiced. And then, you know, we play it. I'm kind of oblivious. I'm an oblivious person a little bit sometimes. I have to check myself to really engage and stay locked in to what's going on. So I got into the we got into the locker room. Spo's the kind of guy, he likes to take things head on. So he's like, hey, the Heat doesn't mean anything. Don't worry about that. And I'm like, what is he talking about? And so I go back in the arena and I'm like, whoa, it's hot. Jesus Christ. I mean, it was way cooler in that crappy locker room in San Antonio. With all due respect, San Antonio.
They don't deserve the due respect. It's a
crappy locker room. You're right. It's a crappy locker room. They should do more. It was flies in there.
You're a champion. You can't have flies and bats in that kind of heat.
That's what they do to win, I guess. You know what I mean? They're throwing everything at you. Like Popovich is like Red Auerbach. It's like you can't prove it, but.
you guys think that that was absolutely something meant to disorient
you. Of course. Why wouldn't they do it? I would do it because I couldn't defend it. That's why I was like, you know, people like make a big deal, Deflategate and all this stuff. Like, hey, look, you can point the finger all you want. You can't fault them for trying to win. They're trying to win. This is in the name of winning, and that's what you got to play against sometimes. If they take it there, what you going to do? You know what I mean? So we're in the game, and I'm like, what you're miserable, bro. I felt like it was like the Thriller in Manila in there. I was like, yo, this is what Ali must have felt like, bro. And I knew Brian was going to cramp.
Did you?
Because, you know, he has that body type. He's always had cramps because his muscle mass is so dense. That I said, yo, it's a perfect storm. He's going to cramp. It's going to happen. But then it happened at the wrong time.
Not that there's any right time.
Yeah,
but that's...
it's not a right time. And then I remember he took it to the hole.
You guys were like up nine, right? Yeah. In the fourth quarter, you had just hit the four.
I can't remember.
The four-point play.
I can't even remember that.
I think I have it, right?
I don't remember being up in game one. I remember being – we were down, actually. We were down 6 points. We were down six. Bron makes a running right. Yeah, he goes right and makes a running hook on the right side. And then we get back on defense. We're down four, and it's a couple minutes. I can't really remember how many minutes were left, maybe 3 or 4 minutes. So I'm like, okay, hell yeah, we cut it to four. And then, I mean, you know how San Antonio moves the ball, and I'm like it's 50 of them out here. Three, you know, and I'm like, yo, what the hell? And I look down, Bron's down. I'm like, oh. And then they carried him off. Then he got made fun of for that. People were killing him for that one. It was pretty funny. But it was pretty funny. But either way, people say, well, if you guys would have won that game. And I said, no, I never go there because we split it. We won game two. Mm-hmm. If you would have asked me, I was like, oh, yeah, we're going to three-peat. Yeah, of course. You saw the grades. You saw everybody before us. We're about to do the same.
But I'm not even talking about three-peating. I'm talking about, like, did you guys, if I'd come to you and said, what's going to become of this team over the next four, five, 6 years?
We'd still be winning championships right now. We'd be the model that the Warriors have. Right now, I think that in my mind, that was the model, what they have right now. And that's what I felt and thought would have transpired.
And it changed in three games. It felt like it, right? It felt like
it. Yeah, I mean, you know, you're on top of the world. You think you're going to do the thing. You're up 1-1 with the advantage, with home court advantage. And we got smoked game three and game four.
Well, I remember you saying that's the best basketball I've ever seen of a team play.
It's just like, I don't know if we're, it became to a point where like, okay, these boys are juiced and we're kind of stuck in a phase where we're trying to bring it, but we can't. We're trying to do something that takes a season to accomplish. We're kind of cutting it a little bit. We've been doing it kind of off and on a little bit and it's showing now, you know, and I mean, the way they were moving the ball and playing and a couple of times it's like, yo, I think, are rotations slow or am I not closing out all the way? They're making the right play every time. It's just a beatdown.
But why wasn't that team and that season more fun?
I mean, the pressure, it's another year of pressure. You know, we were back to back and three-peater bust and the fatigue.
So you understand what's happening with the Warriors now then as you watch it and they're having all
they don't have anybody to take them down though. I don't, you know, the Bucks and the Raptors seem to be that other team, but who's that other, you know, foe that you have to face? How many four finals in a row? Mm-hmm. What is going to be five?
Yeah,
for sure. You see the wear and the tear and, you know, you can see it in the eyes, man. You just, I don't know. It's not that you're disinterested. It's just like another game, another finals game. And it's, you can't even muster up the intensity.
That's
necessary.
Amazing to think that you wanted all of this so badly after 11 playoff games in Toronto when you were an exceptional player.
Yeah.
You were an exceptional player at the top of your craft.
Mm-hmm.
But you couldn't win playoff games because it took more than just you to win playoff games.
And you realize that and you want more. And you want it bad. And then you get there and it's great. And you lose, though. It's like, damn. And you get there and win it, and that's, nobody was getting our way that year. Then you barely win it the next year. I mean, squeak it out. I mean, it's just a fight to the death. And we just made more plays than they did, and it was maybe one or two. It comes down to one or two plays. I know coaches hate that, but it does sometimes. That series came down to one or two.
That came down to one play. If you don't get that rebound and kick it out to Ray, that series is over, and now you've lost two out of the three
and
years.
Now that's even worse. You know, losing the first year, okay, losing the second year, but y'all won one in 3 years. People are doing that to me now. It's like, well, I mean, you won only two. I'm like, damn, dude, only two. Jesus, how many you got? That's crazy. How hard that is, bro?
I know, but I think that, well, you thought it would be easier.
Yeah,
and,
of course.
And I do wonder, you can't call that in any way an underachievement because four finals appearances, losing twice and winning twice is
you
not.
You can count on, I think, two hands now, maybe one hand, how many teams in the history of the sport have done that, in the history of sports, period.
Because it's hard to do, yes.
That's how hard it is to do. Yeah, man, just kind of going through that, dude. You just realize, like, damn, we're not ready. You know, I don't know if we can beat these guys because it's game three and we're down 20 at home. Ugh, that never happened before.
And they just come out and they're just hitting all the
threes. Yeah, they're hitting everything. And then you just naturally are like, yeah, man, this is whack. What else is going on? You know, no. It's the finals. Stop it.
You're thinking about programming at home?
Yeah, because like, it's just like, that's another three. Damn it. Golly, and we're not playing well either. And I feel that's one of the finals that I felt good. Like, offensively, I felt that I was in a rhythm and I really could have, you know, taken on more of a load. But they just played too well, and then we never even settled into a game plan. You know what I mean? It's just like you have a game plan and then you have to rip it up 4 minutes into the game because
nothing
they're
mattered.
Playing.
You went to San Antonio, were up 17 in the first half in game five, and nobody remembers that because you got smoked in that one too.
Yeah, we were up, right? This is how
you're
this
up
is when
big.
I, this
you're
is when
big.
I accepted it that it was they're gonna beat us. Cause you know, we're down 3-1, that's pretty much the death sentence in basketball. But like, no, if any team can do it, we can do it. And I'm still in my mind, we're going to go in here. We're going to do what we have to do. Yeah, we're up whatever, how many ever points. But we were down 7 at halftime. And I remember walking off looking like, oh, we're down 7? Because I wasn't looking at the scoreboard. I said, I'm just going to play basketball. Hell yeah, good half, guys. I looked up, we were down. I said, oh.
You weren't even looking at the scoreboard the whole first half. So you thought you had won the first half.
Because every time in games, you know, 3 and 4, every time I looked up at the scoreboard, it was depressing. So I said, okay, I'm not going to do that to myself this time. I'm going to be smarter than that. I'm just going to play the game. And I look up like, I should have been looking at the scoreboard. Damn it. Where they going to beat us? We are not coming back in the second half. They've got the eye of the tiger.
So what do you imagine the jersey retirement ceremony is going to be for you emotionally?
I'm just going to be along for the ride. I'm confident. I'm very happy and very, very proud to be able to do something like that, especially with an organization like the Heat. I mean, next to other great, great guys. And I mean, only the greats go up there. And my grandfather, he was such an advocate for his family. You know, his name was Jack Bosch. And I mean, he dropped out of the third grade, but he was a business owner and pretty much a rich man in Dallas. I mean, passed on down
own property.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, passed down property to his children. I mean, he was so happy and proud of just his family and just like that name is going to be up there. That's what's most important to me. The accomplishment of that, just being able to have that opportunity and actually accomplish my dream. So that kid inside me is really, really, really going to be happy.
But that's really moving. You're actually thinking of your grandfather and the family name and its legacy being lifted up to Hall of Fame heights.
Yeah, can't take it down. You know, that's what's most important to me. That's really cool. I think the basketball speaks for itself. I think it's kind of it's perfect because it's not done. It's an unfinished painting, but it's a masterpiece. I was looking, searching for meaning and stuff like this, and I was in, this is a true story, I was in Florence, Italy, and I'm already a fan of Leonardo da Vinci, but most of his paintings were unfinished. You know what I mean? He never finished 95%, 99% of his paintings. He didn't even finish. You know, and I'm like, oh, you can't finish it, though, because that kind of, I said it out loud, and I'm like, ah, damn. Really talking about myself, you know what I mean? You can't mess it up now. You can't go back in there and paint anymore. It's done. It's done. So I'm very confident with that. Not content. I'm very happy. I still miss the game. I still wish I could play basketball, but I cannot. So I've moved on.
Enjoying this conversation so much that we're going to have it again extended next week. We've got a part two for you because we spent a lot of time with Chris Bosh and we covered the blood clot situation. We covered LeBron James when he left, Chris Bosh's honest reaction. There's some fun stuff in the next one. So our thanks to Chris Bosh for spending that amount of time with us. If you want to support what we're doing around here, rate, review, and subscribe on South Beach Sessions. You will help us continue to produce more and more content like this where people like Chris Bosh are coming into the studio and we're having some fun with them.
Why are you so sad?
Do I sound sad?
You sound super sad. That was a great interview and you sound very sad.
I'm sorry. Maybe it's because I taped this several weeks after the interview.